The lifespan of Methuselah occupied nearly 60% of the world's history between the day of creation and the day when the judgment of the great flood poured in upon the world. Methuselah lived nearly 60% of that time. So Methuselah would have known people from every generation in the world's history during that period, a time of 1,666 years. And while Methuselah only lived in the latter 1,000 years, roughly, of that time, he would have known those who were already alive when he came into the world. Obviously, that would have included Adam. He would have known Adam. For it was only Noah, of all the patriarchs who lived before the flood, who was born after Adam's death. Only Noah. That's an interesting fact that I think we ought to keep in mind. So Methuselah was in a position to have heard the preaching of Adam, the first man, the man whom God had created out of the dust of the ground, as well as the preaching of Noah, the last man who would preach in the world before the great flood. So Methuselah could contemplate the whole sorry saga of the way in which sin had permeated the creation and had spawned degradation on a global scale. Another truly amazing fact is that Methuselah was alive at the time of the deaths of every one of the patriarchs mentioned in this chapter, with the single exception of Noah. Methuselah's grandfather, Jared, lived until 1,487 years after creation. Or maybe just to make it more brief, we could use the abbreviation AC, after creation, instead of AD that we use now. So Jared lived until 1487 AC. And Lamech died in 1661 AC. And that was just 5 years before Methuselah himself left the world, that in that very same year, God destroyed. As we have observed, aside from Adam and Noah, Methuselah is probably the most well-known of the patriarchs from this ancient world, mainly because of the singular fact that he lived longer than anyone else. He lived for 969 years. So if this year of 2006 A.D. had been the year of Methuselah's death, he would have been born in 1037, nearly 30 years before William the Conqueror led the last successful invasion of Great Britain. When you begin to think of all the events of history that have occurred since 1037 A.D., you begin to see something of the scope of Methuselah's life. Think of the Crusades, the signing of the Magna Carta, the Renaissance, the Reformation, the exploration and settling of the New World, and all the various wars that have marched across the face of that period, the technological advances. If Methuselah's life had filled that span, he would have been in contact with all of those things. But the experience of Methuselah during the period in which he did live was no doubt similar to the one that we would have witnessed if we had lived during a comparable span in our own time. Methuselah witnessed a horrifying slide into the dark manifestation of depravity's nasty fruit. And yet, Methuselah, the son of the honored Enoch, benefited by his father's vision and testimony, and spent all of his days being true to the same word that his father, Enoch, had preached. Methuselah, like those who had come before him in the line of Seth, and like those in the two generations that would be born to him during his lifetime, was a man of faith. Faith in the blood atonement. His life was a life that was counter to the wickedness that surrounded him. We need Methuselahs in this time. Not speaking now about the lifespan. But we need those who will today refuse to be governed by the gods and goddesses of the popular culture who are called appropriately enough idols. We need people who will resolve to walk with God as Enoch did, and as Methuselah must have been instructed to do, both by precept and example. There is in the lives of both Methuselah and Lamech solid instruction for the people of God in another time of apostasy, that is ushering the world again toward cataclysmic judgment. This evening, let us continue our study of gospel bedrock by considering history's oldest man and his son. The only reliable records we have of those people who lived before the great flood are those that we find in the Holy Scriptures. Now, there are, to be sure, other records that came through the words of those eight people who survived the great flood, Noah and his family. But the problem with their accounts that no doubt they transmitted to their descendants was that the darkness of sin twisted the minds of those who came through Shem and Ham and Japheth. And even the testimonies that were related to them and that they in turn related to those who came after them were sure to become perverted, and so they did. In some of those records today, nevertheless, there is some hint of what happened in the world that God destroyed, but even that hint is a great distance from the reality. But here in these verses at the end of Genesis 5, we learn about the centuries that preceded the end of the world as the descendants of Adam had come to know it. And even in those years of darkness and woe, with the descendants of the line of Cain spreading over the face of the earth, there was a glorious testimony concerning the coming of the Redeemer. In the ark that Noah would build, there would be a vivid picture of the way in which Christ himself would deliver those who shelter in him from the wrath of divine judgment on the world. In the birth of that same Noah, there would be the testimony that God would be faithful to his cause and to his promise to bring forth into the world the seed of the woman. I want you to give your attention this evening to three aspects that we observe in the lives of these two men who are named for us here, Methuselah and Lamech. We'll have a lot more to say about Noah by and by. But I want you to think of these three things. And the first of them is the name of doom. The name of doom. Throughout his long life, Methuselah carried the name that was given to him by his father Enoch. Enoch, who, as we said, was a prophet. His prophecy, while it does not appear anywhere in the Old Testament, is referenced in the Epistle of Jude. Now, there is some divergence of opinion on the exact meaning of the name that Enoch gave to his son, but the Hebrew word for death comes at the beginning of his name, and that which follows has been construed to mean, in various ways, that which is a judgment. For example, some have said that Methuselah means, when he dies, a dart. Or even more simply, he dies, a dart. The more common translation is, when he dies, it shall come. Or, more simply than that, when he dies, judgment. Whatever it was, the world, Enoch was saying, would not see it until after the death of Methuselah. So Enoch was looking forward nearly 1,000 years when he named his son. Methuselah lived 969 years. He was born, to use our shorthand, in 697 A.C., after creation. And he died, therefore, in 1666 A.C. Lamech, the son of Methuselah, was born 187 years after his father. That was in the year 884 A.C. And Noah was born 182 years later, in 1066 A.C. Now we learn in the Scriptures that the great flood came in the 600th year of Noah's life. And that was in 1666 A.C., the very year in which Methuselah died. You see, God is interested in precision. Some people wonder, why are all these facts, all these years and all these things, why are they all set out in the Bible? What's the importance of them? It is to remind us that God is interested in the details. He's interested in the last detail. And during all of his long life, Methuselah knew the significance of his name. That after his death, the judgment of God was going to be let loose in the world. And no doubt there were others from the line of Seth who knew it as well. Others who had, of whom we read in this chapter, who died one by one during Methuselah's long life, they also knew that when he would die, the judgment of God would come. As the ark was being built, during all those years, those who listened to the preaching of Noah would have to know that there was a great indicator of how close they were to the judgment. Now, there was an indicator in the progress of the work on the ark, but not too many people believed that there was going to be any flood, for it had never rained. But there was an indicator as well in the life of Methuselah. As he got older, and older. As he approached the lifespan of his grandfather, who up until then had lived the longest, 962 years, as he approached that lifespan, there must have been people who wondered, look, Methuselah's not got too many more years to live. What's going to happen when he dies? As long as he was living, the time for the flood had not arrived. As long as he was living, there was opportunity for people to hear the preaching of Noah and to believe it and to repent. But all his life, Methuselah carried that name that meant that doom was in the offing for the world. Everyone who spoke his name would have to be reminded that Methuselah, however long he had lived, that Methuselah too would come to die when he dies. That is, he would not cheat death. He would not go on living. He would come to die, and when he would come to die, it would be followed by the judgment of which Noah was warning the world. Can you imagine those years toward the end of Methuselah's life? The patriarchs had all died off. They were passing away. There were fewer and fewer who were prepared to heed the warnings. But still, Methuselah carried that name. His life was a warning of the coming of judgment. Those who were wise took heed, but not many were wise. Interestingly, the devil had his counterfeits in the line of Cain. There was in the line of Cain, as we saw, an Enoch. That was Cain's son. There was also a man called Methusael. And there was a man called Lamech. There are always those counterfeits that the devil uses in his effort to make a mockery of the people who stand for the truth. If you stand for the truth, the devil's going to try to paint you as an object for ridicule. And no doubt he tried to suggest to people that Methuselah was such an object for ridicule. But as Methuselah's life went on, and the life of his son Lamech went on, the judgment was drawing inexorably closer. Every year of Methuselah's life that passed, and especially after he passed the age of his grandfather, people were no doubt watching him very closely, probably looking for bulletins weekly, if not daily, about his health. Is Methuselah sick? Has he got a cold? Is he suffering some ailment that's gonna bring him to mortality? Because if that happens, then we know what's in the offing. But as those lives went on, there was another great truth that we need to observe. And that is the patience for God. The patience for God. Now, Methuselah lived a long time. And a lot of people know, just as a point of trivia, that he lived the longest of anybody recorded in the Bible. And everybody thinks, "My, that would be a great thing, would it not, to live for 969 years? But did you ever stop to think that the length of his life may have been for him a source of trial? Because he knew that the world was getting worse and worse. He knew that the world awaited only his death before the judgment of God was going to come. So what did he know? Things were not going to be improving. He could look around him and be more distressed at the things he saw on every hand. And he had to know, this is not getting any better. It's getting worse. And still he had to live in the midst of it. His life went on and on and on, and conditions got worse and worse and worse. His father, it's true, was taken out of the world in a miraculous fashion. Methuselah could remember the day when his father did not come home. But everybody else who left the world had to wait for death to depart. So he was waiting. It was a life of waiting. And I like to think of Methuselah in that way. A man who knows that as soon as he dies, the judgment's going to be unleashed. And he's just waiting. Waiting for death. And yet he has to wait longer than anybody ever had to wait for it. We're not told if he had any ailments that led to his death. We're not told anything about it except the fact that he came to die. But in all of his waiting, he knew that death would come. He knew that death would come before the judgment would make its appearance. So what we have in the life of Methuselah is a testimony of faithfulness to God throughout nearly a millennium of life. Now, we spoke about Enoch in the last message in this series, and we spoke about Enoch living for God in a corrupt age. And certainly, Enoch's life is something for us to take to heart. But what of Methuselah? Living nearly three times as long as Enoch. Nearly three times as long as his father in this world. And all about him, having to use the testimony of Enoch, its instruction, and to go on living while conditions deteriorated. It must have tried his soul. He spent his years waiting. He had to be patient. The people of God today are in much the same situation. They are waiting too. They are waiting for the judgment of God to be unveiled. They are waiting for Christ to appear. They are looking for the appearing, as Paul said, of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. They are looking for that. They are waiting for it. But there's nothing they can do to hasten it. There was nothing Methuselah could do to hasten the end of his life. I think that's one of the lessons of his long life. He waited all the way to the end. That patience is full of instruction for us. We wait for God as well. We have the promise that Enoch himself made that God will bring in judgment upon the world of the ungodly, that the world that was inundated with water is now, as Peter says, held in store, reserved unto the day of judgment, unto the day of fire. So how do we deal in our time with the things that discourage us and that dismay us? With the wickedness that is all about us, we do what Methuselah did. We wait for God. It's the testimony of the psalmist. You turn to Psalm 130. Psalm 130. And verse 5. I wait for the Lord. My soul doth wait. And in His word do I hope. My soul waiteth for the Lord more than they that watch for the morning. I say more than they that watch for the morning. Do you wait for the Lord? Do you hope in His word? We hope in that which God has revealed, and that's what Methuselah hoped in as well. And toward the middle part of his life, he got another indication that God was going to be faithful. For at the end of this passage, there's something that keeps us going, and that is the cry of hope. And here we come to the testimony of Methuselah's son, Lamech. Lamech was waiting as well. And we read that when Lamech was 182 years old, he had a son. And the prophet's mind that was in Lamech, for he too was a prophet, had a name ready for him. He called him Noah. It's the Hebrew word for rest or comfort. It is interesting to me that we have read through the entire chapter and we have read the names of all those who came through the line of Seth, those who would be in the line of the Redeemer. For let's remember, every one of the people named in this genealogy, whether they were first born to their fathers or not, and I don't think all were firstborn, but every one of these people named in this chapter is also named in Luke chapter 3 in the genealogy of the Son of God. And so here we come to Noah. And through this whole chapter, we have not had one word of any of these patriarchs recorded, other than that name which they would give to their son, to their sons. But now we have the words of Lamech. And I think it's interesting, it just struck me this afternoon, that there's almost a counterpoint, if you will. If you just look back to the end of the previous chapter, and verse 23, we have the speech of the Lamech who came through Cain. Lamech said unto his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech, hearken to my speech, for I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold. There was the Lamech who came through Cain. Now look at the words of the Lamech who came through Seth. Regarding his son Noah, this same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. And what a contrast there is there between the Lamech who came through Cain and the Lamech who came through Seth. And here's God's answer to the devil's counterfeit. What were Lamech and Methuselah looking for? Comfort. They were looking for comfort. They were looking for rest. They were in a world that was marked by hardness. They were in a world that was groaning under the curse of sin. The curse of the Lord was resting upon it. And they were finding it more and more difficult to keep going. Notice what Lamech says concerning our work and toil of our hands. Let's remember, however long they lived, their lives were not easy. They had to work hard. They were looking for rest. What were they looking for? They were looking for the fulfillment of the promise. The fulfillment of the coming of the Redeemer. And when Noah was born, they saw the hope. Lamech, with his prophet's eye, gave him a name that said, this one will be the means of bringing comfort and rest. That was 6 centuries before the judgment of God would be unleashed. But they saw it coming. They saw it was getting closer. In the birth of Noah, they saw the reality that God would not let His promises perish. He had promised that the Redeemer would come. And though Abel had been murdered, Seth was raised up to be the progenitor of that line. And Lamech could see that not even the cataclysmic judgment of God that was going to come at the death of his father Methuselah, not even that judgment would derail the purpose of God. This then is a cry of hope. This is the evidence that God is going to preserve his promise even through the judgment that is about to come. That cry of hope came again in those dark years that preceded the birth of Jesus Christ. People were looking for the coming of Messiah. They were looking for the coming of the Redeemer. All the years that had passed had done nothing but to show how futile the efforts of their hands were. They were looking for the one who would come and deliver them. And Christ came. Now we are in a time of looking again for the coming of Christ. For the coming of Christ. And as we wait for that coming, what do we look to? Not the promise of his coming advent to redeem his people. We are looking to the reality that he has come. We are looking to his sacrifice and his work on the cross of Calvary. The very things that are memorialized for us in this supper that we partake of this evening. We are here to look forward with the backward look to the cross. We remember the death of Christ as an accomplished reality, and we look forward until he comes. And we learn that God's ancient promises are going to come to pass. There's an interesting postscript to the story of Methuselah and Lamech. And you may have caught it, if not in the reading, in something that I said. Lamech died in 1661 A.C., to use our shorthand. Methuselah did not die until 1666 A.C. In fact, you read through this chapter and you come to the death of Lamech and you find that he died at the age of 777, and that would be like a person today dying at the age of 45 or 50. You would say, well, he was so young, he was so premature in his death. We aren't told what caused him to die before Methuselah, but I think we trace in this as well the providence of God. God wanted Methuselah to be the one in the focus. When he dies, it shall come. Don't you think Noah was looking at Methuselah? As he was moving the preparations for the ark forward, don't you think he was looking at Methuselah? Methuselah is still living. It's not time yet. But when he dies, it's going to come. We need to be ready. We need to get the ark finished. So Methuselah buried his son. Here was a man who was much older, buried his son. Methuselah was 964 when that happened. Already the oldest man who had ever lived in the world. And soon Methuselah came to realize that with the exception of Noah and his family, all of those who had trusted in the Redeemer were gone. He was the only one remaining. Can you imagine what he would have felt in those last years of his life as he heard, no doubt, of others who died from the extended family? Now he's the only one left, and Noah knows it too. And then the word comes, Methuselah is gone. And what Noah knew then was the time of judgment has arrived. I don't know who the Methuselahs are in the world today, but I can tell you there will come a time when God's purpose will be brought to fulfillment. And what is the message for us? It is to follow the example of Methuselah. In a sense, we also carry the burden that he carried. We know how it's going to end. We know what's going to happen. It was not for him a cause for woe. It was a cause in him for concern for all those who were around him in his extended family. And they were all his extended family. It is a cause for us while we look forward to the coming of Christ. It is a cause for us to express our concern for those who are around us. The day is going to come when Christ will appear. And once again, God's judgment, cataclysmic judgment, judgment of such a nature that Peter describes it as the heavens melting with a fervent heat, a flash of fire. That judgment's going to come. Let us remember the example of history's oldest man and of his son. They never lost their hope that the Redeemer would appear. So today, let us keep our eyes unto him.